Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But first this morning, Zach Moradi has an unusual claim to fame. He's the first hurler of Kurdish origin to have played in the Lawrie Mar Cup in Croke Park. He came to Ireland as a child, as a refugee, and for years he has called Talla home. But he played inter-county hurling for Leitrim, the county that welcomed him and his family in 2002. Zach returned to his homeland recently for a documentary about his life. It's called Home, the story of Zach Moradi, and it's going to be screened in the Galway Film Fla, and Zach's here with me now. Zach, good morning. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love the documentary. And look, we'll talk lots about it. First of all, your family's Kurdish. Your parents would have lived in Kurdish Iran, but they ended up in a refugee camp in Iraq. Can you give me and my listeners a potted history of why the Kurds were moved off their own land and out of their cities?
It all kind of started in 1980. Iraq invaded Iran, and first place was Kurdistan of Iran was invaded. Literally, as I always say, it's only a puck of a ball between Kurdistan of Iraq and Iran, where my parents were farmers. So about 50,000 people from Kurdistan of Iran ended up as the Iraqi army told them to move on. So all they had was that they got onto their tractors. This was in the middle of the war. It was like Russia invading Ukraine, just out of nowhere, similar type. So 50,000 of them ended up in Kurdistan of Iraq. And they ended up in Zarai, an Arbat refugee camp, which you'll see in the documentary.
Yeah.
My parents lived in tents for about 9 months, exactly nearly 44 years ago. And then after that, they were moved on. They were taken back in army trucks, about 12,000 of them, back into a place called Ramadi, and they lived there for close to 6 years, and then 2 years back into Kurdistan of Iraq then. And they moved to a place called Zarayan, just literally a couple of miles away from Halabja, and they used to do their shopping there. And then lucky that day, they weren't in Halabja, and the Iraqi government, Saddam Hussein, used chemical attack against the Halabja people, and 5,000 people died that day on the 16th of March in 1988. And then after that, then they moved back into the refugee camp in Ramadi, and then we stayed there, spent close to 20 years in a refugee camp. And so in the documentary, it shows us obviously going back to Kurdistan of Iraq and seeing, obviously, meeting two survivors from the Halabja chemical attack, and them two persons we met, they have no one left. All their families, all their brothers and sisters, they're the only two survivors, and they've no one. And so it's very sad. But there's one person I wanted to thank, especially Declan Ryan, from the Ryanair family. Only without him, this would not happened. It was his idea, and sometimes he doesn't like his name being mentioned, but I'll mention him. He's a great guy. He does so much for refugees and immigrants, and even in Ireland, he does a lot for a lot of, you know, building community centres all over the country. And he has done, the Ryanair family have done so much, and they don't want their name mentioned.
But you've done it now, so credit where credit is due.
They do so much, but there's so many great people out there in Ireland.
Now, you were born in that refugee camp, were you?
I was, yeah. I was born in the Altash refugee camp, it was called. There's no one actually left in that refugee camp. So most of the people that were in that refugee camp, they were all relocated all around Europe and Canada and Australia and New Zealand.
And when you look back now, I suppose, Zach, as an adult, looking back on what your parents had to endure, because they had done, like, they were quite well to do, your parents, weren't they? Like, they did well in their lives, and suddenly they were stuck in this camp. Their life changed so radically.
Yeah, it's, as I always say, nobody chooses to be a refugee. It's, my parents had everything when they were growing up, and as I said, my parents, like, he was only 16, and like, he had a house in Kirmash, a place called Kirmash of the city, and a population of 2-3 million Kurds. They had a house in the city, and he also had a car when he was 16. And not many people in Ireland in the 70s or 80s would have had a car. My parents and his brothers had cars. the tractors, they had buses, they had shops, and they were very well off, you know. But all of a sudden, when war comes to your door, they lost everything. All they had was a tractor when they fled with my three brothers and older sister.
So what brought the Moradis to Ireland? Like, when did they come here?
Well, obviously, sometimes people think that you just jump on the back of a truck and you just leave your country. It doesn't work that way. Obviously, you register, with the UN or the Red Cross, and they relocate you to a different country, but you'd be on a waiting list. So we were on a waiting list for probably 12, 13 years probably, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's people out there on a waiting list for the last 40 years. And then Ireland were taking on people, refugees. So every country around the world, they take, you know, a couple of families, or sometimes bigger countries would take a couple of hundred or 1,000 or 2,000. Like Germany would have took, just say, 1 million there a couple of years ago in one go. But then I didn't even know what Ireland was. So to be honest with you, I didn't. I'm only telling you the truth.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Because I was only a kid. So we came to Ireland in 2002 then. That's why I said in the book, life begins in Leitrim. Yeah. And we only lived there 2 years. But that's where I kind of learned my English and picking up playing sports. And then obviously then 2 years later, then we moved to Talla in Dublin. And then we've been there since.
Tell me first about Leitrim. When you went there, what must have been quite alien? Did it seem really different?
It was very different, obviously, when I think back. Even when we were doing this documentary, we just said, oh, hopefully it doesn't rain when we're going down to Leitrim. when we arrived, it was lashing rain, and it was July. And the same thing when we drove down, it was just lashing rain. And that's the only thing about Leitrim, it's always raining down the west.
But it's beautiful.
But it's beautiful and green, But there were the memories I'll probably never forget. They said it's summer, and it was lashing rain when we moved over. But
when you went, can you remember, were people very welcoming to you?
People were very welcoming people. I always say Ireland, the people are very warm people and very welcoming. It's just the country is cold, you know. But they were very welcoming and they were very helpful. There was a lot of great people in Leitrim. We never had any issues with anybody down there. They were all, you know, very good to us. And the same with when we moved over to Talla, and when I joined Thomas Davis GAA Club, it was the same thing. I only joined them when I was about 13, 14, playing Gaelic, and the managers, Con Deasy or Derek Howie, they'd pick me up and give me lift homes. And like, I never forget them days, you know. Obviously, you can't do the same things now anymore. You have to have a parent with you when you're, you know, I miss them days where your manager would be knocking at you 10 in the morning, you'd be in bed, come on, you're coming, you know. But they're great memories, and there's great people everywhere, you know, I always say, you know. And same with,
absolutely.
And same with when we were doing the documentary as well, we went back to Kurdistan, and Kurdistan, Southern Kurdistan is 6 million people, so they have their own regional government and parliament and so on. But they have over 1.2 million refugees, a population of 6 million on that side. And you're like, you could see there, everywhere in the world you go, there's always refugees, and you meet people, a lot of them are forced out of their homes because of war, you know. And there's a lot of even Kurdish people I met, there are refugees in their own country, you know. So that's the sad part, you know. So it just...
Now, who taught Zach Moradi to hurl? Who was, like, first of all, did you know anything about the game beforehand, and who taught you to hurl?
No, I didn't really know anything. Well, I started off, and you know, in every primary school you have GPOs, GPO, like it was Clement Kniff, he still plays hurling with Leitrim, he's gone about 19, 20 years with Leitrim at this stage, but it was him. And then I joined the club then, St. Mary's Carrick Hurling in Leitrim, started playing Gaelic and hurling with them. And then it was just different sport. I've played all other sports, but I loved playing sports in general. I watch any sport, you know, that happens, you know. I was just one of them mad into sport. I wanted to play every sport I could, but I ended up just sticking with playing Gaelic and hurling. And same with when I came to Dublin, when I moved to Thomas Davis GAA Club in Talla, and I just stuck with the hurling and Gaelic. And I just thought, when you play these two sports, you're playing with the same people week in, week out. And as you grow up, it's the same people you're playing with. And it's now I was only down at a wedding in Leitrim there about a couple of weeks ago, a fella called Fergal Early, and the wedding I was there is all the lads I played hurling with, and all the lads I remember when I was younger, I grew up with, and same with Thomas Davis. I was at a fella called Ryan Deegan. I used to coach him when he was younger, and I playing hurling and football with him, and all the lads that were there, it's the lads that plays hurling and football together, and Thomas Davis 20 years later, we're all just still.
Those GPOs are great, and the games promotions offices for the GA. How important, though, Zach, I suppose, is hurling to your sense of community and to your sense of being Irish as well as being Kurdish?
Well, hurling means, I say, I talk about when any friends I meet, whether there's work or where I'm a Thomas Davis GA club or where I'm out, I always talk about hurling. Our football, our Gaelic, and you'd always be giving out as well. It's not always positive. You're giving out, Dublin should have done this, if Dublin hurlers done this, or the club we should have done this. But there's this great atmosphere, sports, I always say hurling, GAA, it unites the country. It's like today I'm going up to watch the Limerick and Cork game. It's sold out, full house, and the atmosphere it'd be unreal, but in the end of the day, it doesn't matter who wins or lose, we'd all have a few points after and we'd all get on. There'd be no rows, there'd be nothing like that, but if everybody, you'll always meet people if you play hurling or football, you always make friends with different people from all around the country. So anywhere I'll go, I always meet people, I even down to watch the Cork and Tipperary hurling match there with my friend Brendan Kirby, and when we went to Mackey's pub, and all of a sudden there's about 10-20 people we know because of hurling. Just they're from Tip, and it's great that way. That's the great thing about the GA. You'd always know people. Yeah. You'd always, even if you're, if you go to a pub or you'd always know someone.
Yeah, it's just great. You
something to talk about,
What was it like playing in Croke Park for you?
I always say it's the best feeling ever, because not many people get to play in Croke Park. It's always, when you look at example, Clare hurlers probably get, big hurling strongholds, like a religion down there. But they don't really get to play in Croke Park. Now, last year they only got once, and this year they get twice, semi-final. Yeah. So not many, you might have Tony Kelly, the greatest hurler of all time for Clare. He'll only get a chance to play in hurling in Croke Park a couple of times. But I got to play there twice, and I'm happy. but in Leitrim, we don't often get to play there, but when we get there, we celebrate. The same with the footballers, only have got 5 times they have played in Croke Park, so not many people would get to play in Croke Park unless you get to win something or you get to a semi-final. It's a great place to play, but I think it's every kid's dream to play in Croke Park as well. And sometimes you have to earn it to play there, which is a good thing.
And of course, your dad, he loved watching you play, Zach, didn't he? But he didn't, sadly, live long enough to see that final. What happened to your dad?
My dad, home was home for him, because he come from a big farm, and he had a lot of farm at home, and the uncles and all still live there, and they have a great life. And obviously it took them years to rebuild their lives when they moved back and snuck back into the country around in the 90s. They had nothing left. They had to rebuild their lives again. They lived in tents for about 2 years by the time they rebuilt their lives again. And my dad wanted to go, he always talked about home, going back. And he went back home, after 20-odd years later. And then on the way back, he had a heart attack in the plane. And the plane had to return back to Iran then, and he was buried at home then on the land. But Kurdistan was home, But for us, because we're all grown up here, Ireland is home for us.
Yeah.
Because we're all grown up here. So we only kind of, just a visit, a month holiday or 2 weeks there and there, we like it there because it's just different lifestyle. It's not for us. But for my parents, that's their home. That's why I always look at, if you ever see a lot of refugees from around the, people in their 50s or 60s, you see all the wars that's going on. If you're 50 or in your 40s or 50, you don't want to be leaving your home and going to another country at all. For kids, it's easier to integrate. But for my parents, it was always home was their home. Sometimes you might look at a Syrian refugees or Kurdish refugee in their 50s or 60s because of war, or whether it's Palestinians or Jews or whatever they are, they don't want to be leaving leaving their homes when they're in their 60s. They're settled there. That's where they're from. That's where they want to be. And I always say, refugees are not poor people. You know, the whole Middle East is full of wealth. You know, people don't want to be leaving their homes to go to another country unless they want to go for a holiday.
And your mom, of course, she's still alive and well and here.
Yeah. 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 I know she loves it now. You know, she has kind of settled into Ireland now. Yeah. She wouldn't. One thing about my mom, like Ireland is kind of home for her. But for my dad, home was home. But because of my mom, all her sisters and brothers, they're all in Sweden and Denmark and Norway. They're there since the 80s, 90s. So all her brothers in England, they're all over there. So she kind of has no one at home. So home is Ireland. So so she kind of gets a free trip away to Sweden and Norway. So
great.
But they always, you know, when my dad was alive, was kind of home, thinking about home. When my mom's parents were alive, they wanted kind of home.
Now, tell me about making this documentary, and it's a wonderful documentary, Zach. Going back to Kurdistan, of course, I think it was your first time back in about 20 years. What was that like for you?
It was emotional, and it was, you know, I was happy to go back and see what, because Kurdistan is a, you know, there's four Kurdistans, obviously, I don't like keep saying it, but I went to Kurdistan of Iraq, that would have been my first time staying there. I went to the refugee camp, visit kids there in Kurdish and Arab refugees from Syria. And my parents were in the same refugee camp. I wanted to see what it actually looked like, you know. But it was an amazing feeling, because before 1991 and up to even 2003, Kurdistan was under the Saddam Hussein regime. The Kurdish people had suffered a lot. Lost over hundreds of thousands of people over the years, but I was so happy when I seen, like, walking around, a lot of people were speaking Kurdish, and because for most years Kurdish was banned, the language was banned, and I just seen what the people have fought for. And now, but at the same time, the downside of it, you're going to meet a refugee camp as well, where there's people are suffering, and that was the sad part as well. It brought back a lot of memory. And even the lads that were with me, the producers, Ellen James and Will Rock, and the director, Trev Whelan, and they got very emotional, the people that were with us, the crew that came down with us. But it's when you see them, they're like, you know, they might look happy, you know that it's 10,000 of them stuck in a little refugee camp. But if you feel sorry for all the kids, the older, you know, the people there in their 50s, 60s, they just get on with it, you know. But they're just trying to keep their kids happy. And it was the same when I was growing up. My parents were just trying to make us happy, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same. You see fellas going around their bare feet playing football. And then it was the same thing. It just brought back a lot of memories.
It's a very emotional moment, actually. You know, that moment when you meet the children in the school. Did you almost recall yourself as a young boy? Or what? You brought your brother as well, of course.
It was because when I was went to the classroom, it was exactly the same. There was no, like, nearly all the refugee camps around the world, it's just they all have the same system. It's just nearly it's like when you're in a European city, you can kind of, when you go to Ireland or London, it's nearly similar. You go to, there's a bar, but when you're a refugee camp, it's always the same. There's a little market there, and there's fellas going around their bare feet playing football. And the same with the school. It would be three or four of us sitting on a table. And then when I went in there, and like, I got very emotional. It was very sad because it was exactly the same thing. The classes be overcrowded, and, you know, and then you have the teachers trying their best. And obviously, you know, UNICEF Ireland does great work all around the world and refugee camps, trying to, you know, keep kids educated. And because that's one important thing as well, you know, when people are giving money to charities, their money are going towards the good things, you know. So,
which is great. I think it was Dr. Dilman Ahmed, he was showing you around. Great guy. You also visited mountains. It's a really beautiful landscape. Do you own land there? Or do you ever think you might spend some time there in the future?
You know, my cousin only rang me there yesterday. He says, when you're coming, are you coming back with me? I was like, I'm going for 3 months. I said, it's grand for you. You have three restaurants in Sweden. You can take it 3 months off. I said, I only have 21 bleeding days. I said, I'll go with you next year. Yeah, like Kurdistan is it's beautiful. And like my dad always said, it's like Ireland because we're surrounded. Kurdistan is probably even the size of France nearly, you know. Yeah. It's surrounded by mountains and there's a lot and it's beautiful and there's a lot of wealth as well. And there's, unfortunately as well, like, you know, our people don't like getting into politics, but our people have suffered, you know, in these countries. But things might change, you know. I seen there yesterday, the president of Iran for the first time is a Kurd, and the president of Iraq is a Kurd. So things might change in the Middle East, hopefully. But
do you think, though, that you'll ever have your own homeland, or is that even way too complicated to even imagine?
I think, you know, it depends. I don't know, maybe not in my lifetime, but like all Kurds, all we want is be treated equally. You know, if we're a Kurd in Iran, we want to be treated equally, as is an Iranian. If we're in Iraq, like, well, Kurdistan of Iraq, it's like its own country now because it's a regional government. So it's like two different countries, but one system. They're part of Iraq, they get their budget, they have their own parliament, they have their, like, if you go from Kurdistan to Iraq, you have to show your passport.
Right.
You know, they might be part of the president of Iraq be a Kurd, and they'll have to share, like, it's like Northern Ireland, they share in power or whatever way they do it. But and then we have in Syria as well, since 2011, well, they call it the Syrian Democratic Forces, but it's the Kurdish forces, but because to keep Turkey happy. And now, and it's unfortunately, it's very sad, you know, even Turkey are bombing Kurdistan every single day, and we don't talk about that, but we don't want, anyway, but that's another.
No, which it's is another. Terrible. But what religion are Kurds, by the way?
We're all religions.
you are, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, we have Kurdish Jews, Christian Jews, Zoroastrianism, Sunni Muslims, Yarasanis. You probably never heard. My mom's side are Yarasani. They believe in fire or something like that. Yeah.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
And what, like, are they called again?
Yarasani.
Okay.
There's only probably about a million of them.
That's
so where we are in
where
we were in Kurdistan of Iran, like where we live, the Yarasanis kind of live on the left hand side. There'd be all the Yarasani people, and they're Kurdish, but their culture would be different. Their identity, you know, and same with, then we go a little bit further up, you get Kurdish Shias, you know, and then we have my dad's side would be Sunni Muslims, but then you go up again, then you have Kurdish Yazidis, and then you go up again, you've got Azerbaijanis. But like Kurdistan is very multicultural. Like I was down for a dinner, example, in one of my friends' house, and they're from Kurdistan. So we were there, my girlfriend's Irish, and my friend Azad was there. He's from Kurdistan, and he met his wife, Gliona. She's originally from Roscommon, and they came to Ireland about 35 years ago and set up a Zaytun restaurant. There's about 5-6 of them in Dublin. And then next to my friend, and then there's another Kurdish fellow there. His mother is Kurdish, but his dad was Turkish. But you could see there was about, and there's another fellow there from Iran, speak Farsi, and then his
makes
mother,
Ireland look so very
there,
like, simple.
There was nearly 10 different languages where we are, you know. But we all had a great crack and a glass of wine. But Kurdistan was always it's always very multicultural, you know, and that's why sometimes people are afraid of multicultural. There's, you know.
But look, finally, Ireland is definitely home for you. You have an Irish girlfriend. You're going to stay here forever and continue playing hurling?
Yeah, Ireland. Well, I'm getting a bit older now, so, you know, let's try to play a bit of junior hurling and junior football, you know. But yeah, Ireland's home. And if Ireland were playing against soccer against Iraq or Iran, I'd be supporting Ireland, you know, because
this is
and I always say 99% of Irish people are genuinely good people, and they're always willing to help, because I think the Irish have suffered themselves back in the day, so they know the history, what it's like to, you know. But Ireland's a great country, and they're very helpful people. And even when I'm in Tala is sometimes people think it's a big place. Tala's a small place, and there's so many great people in Tala as well that do great work helping refugees and immigrants. And it's very multicultural, and everybody gets on with life.
Well, look, Zach Moradi, thank you very much for coming into studio this morning and for making Ireland your home. The documentary Home, the story of Zach Moradi, your story, is going to be screening in the Galway Film Flat on Friday, the 12th of July at 4:15 in the Paulus Cinema. Thanks so much, Zach. Mind yourself.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a million. We'll take a break.